I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we're starting in Narromine.
Yes.
And I'm chatting with Peter Kirath.
Yes, at the Narromine Aviation Museum.
Absolutely, absolutely. The Narromine Aviation Museum. And I have to tell you, Peter is a wealth of information.
Yes, he is.
So much so that we couldn't possibly fit him in one program. So he's going to be on this one and he's going to be on next week's program
Oh, wow. Very good.
As well as a fabulous song he asked me for, okay? I'm just going to let you know, Peter, you did ask me for an original. So how does Jack O'Hagan sound?
Oh, who's he?
Well, he's a piano player who sings The Road to Gundagai, and that's the song he asked me for, and you can't get much further back in time than Jack O'Hagan, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sure Peter's going to enjoy that.
Yes.
Now, straight after that, I'll be chatting with Jeff
Dieth.
Yes. And he's going to be talking us through compliance plates.
Yes.
It's a little confusing. It can be a bit confusing, but nonetheless, a very, very important subject. So Jeff Dieth, our regular from Checkweight, talking compliance plates.
Yes, and then we're going to chat with a lovely couple we met at Helene, Rachel and Matthew, and their two kids.
Right, the two kids. Now these guys are doing a big lap,
yes,
and
they got two little
babies. I hope they're still travelling and they haven't murdered each other, because they got two little ones. Two little ones can be a bit difficult in a caravan. On the road, especially if the weather's not the best. How do you entertain little ones, okay?
No.
Or even worse, if the weather's bad and you've got no internet, so the little fella can't watch the Wiggles.
No. They're going to talk to us about their brand-new Hurricane Enduro family van.
That's right. Now, they've just bought this brand-new Hurricane and they let us have a look at it. A fabulous van.
Yep. No, it looked good.
And they're doing a big lap. So good luck to those two.
Yep.
Now, as well as all of this wonderful information from these fabulously
interesting people.
Interesting people, yes. We also have a great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So what do you reckon, Lynn? On with the show!
Oh, hello listeners, Phil C here, and this is Roaming Oz, and we're at Narromine, and I'm chatting with Peter Kirath.
Yes.
Peter Kirath, and he is the chairman of the Narromine Aviation Museum. How are you today, Peter?
Oh, Philip, I'm exceptionally well, mate. If I was any fitter, I'd be dangerous.
Yes, I hear that saying quite a lot, and I say that to my partner, Lynn, and she looks at me and says, don't talk to me that way. So, Peter, tell us a little bit about this fabulous museum. First of all, how long have you been involved? You're the chairman. You've obviously been here a while.
I said 25 years, probably about that, although the museum hasn't been here that long.
Okay.
It was opened in 2002.
Right.
And so, yes, I've been involved for a fair period. But what we're doing here is telling the story of aviation in Narromine.
Okay.
It sort of really started with Keith and Ross Smith when they landed here in the Vickers Vimy in February of 1920 on the Great Air Race.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had quite a lot of planes used to fly in and out of here during the 20s, and including Charles Kingsford Smith and others. But then the Narromine Aero Club was set up in 1929, and we think it's one of the oldest in regional Australia these days.
Right.
And they set up T.E. Perry, listed 74, rented 700 acres to the Aero Club for a shilling a year.
Yes.
And so that got flying going. They had the first air show here in 1930.
Right.
And then had others in 31, 35 and 38.
Okay.
And so you can see that Narromine was quite a hub. That first one they had over 5,000 people here then.
Right.
And they ran trains up from Bathurst and Orange and Parkes and Forbes to Narromine.
Okay.
And so Then, of course, the war came and they set up number 5, Elementary Flying Training School here.
Right.
The first 4 were in Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Brisbane. Mm-hmm. Number 5 was in Narromine. And during the next 4 years, they trained 2,850 pilots here, which was over 20% of all the pilots trained in Australia.
Wow.
So, but then they wound it up and we got 8 OTU, an operational training unit here, but they were only here for a couple of months and they moved them to Parkes because we got 618 Squadron RAF here.
Okay.
And they had about 35 mosquitoes here. And they were dropping Barnes Wallace's bouncing bomb.
Aha, okay.
And so that was... but then, of course, the Americans dropped the atomic bombs in early August. Mm-hmm. They wound the squadron up here. But they did sell the aircraft in 1947. They had a sale.
Yep.
So you could buy a mosquito with engines for 75 quid.
Wow.
you could buy one without engines for 25 quid.
Okay.
And you could buy a Merlin still in the grease, still in its box for 10 quid.
Wow.
And okay. So, but the bonus, mainly the farmers, everything was rationed. Fuel okay. was rationed at, mm-hmm. you know, 5 gallons a month and all that sort of stuff. But when a lot of the farmers bought the old the aircraft for yep. spare parts, they okay. wanted the wheels and the nuts and bolts because everything in those days was rationed.
Mm-hmm.
So they found that when they got the planes out on the farm, they were full of fuel.
Uh-huh. Right.
But it was 150 octane, which was a bit hot for the old tractors.
Yes.
So they used to shandy at 50-50 with kerosene, and okay. it was just right. That was so perfect. That was really a big bonus.
Okay.
So, so that's what that display is about over there. And then we've got also a list of all the Narromine POWs. So
right.
There's 35 there.
Okay.
And so, then when they wound that up, Qantas started here about 1948 and they trained here for 20 odd years.
Mm-hmm.
Started with DC-4s, then the Constellations and Super Constellations, and then in 1957 I think they ordered the 707s, and so they trained here touch and go day and night. But anyway, so there's been a lot of mm-hmm. activity here.
So what about the World War II veterans, Tiger Moths? Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, that was number 5 Elementary Flying Training School.
Okay, that's what
they had about
that.
85
yes.
Tiger Moths here.
Alrighty.
We have been through all the records of the people that trained here uh-huh. and checked all their initials,
right.
all the spellings,
mm-hmm.
What units they served in, the right. ranks they got to, the decorations they got, and most importantly, whether or not they came back. And we found that over 25% of those blokes didn't come back.
Didn't come back.
That's right.
Wow.
So
okay.
770 or 80, yeah. So.
Okay. So what other things in the museum do you think would interest people travelling through?
Well, the planes. We have currently 4 planes in here.
Right.
3 of which are unique in the world. This okay. is a Corbin Super Ace.
Okay.
It was imported as a kit
right.
from the States by Jack Coomber uh-huh. in 1937.
Right.
And he assembled it. And used to fly it back and forth to Dubbo
right.
During pre-war. And then, of course, the war came. It saw no action. And then he used to fly it a bit afterwards and then sold it off. And we got it back probably 9 or 10 years ago now.
Okay.
And we had it restored. We lost it. We didn't know where it was
okay.
for quite a number of years. But so... We've been in touch with the Corbin Society in the States, and this is the only one in the world that they know of.
Wow.
They said they built 8, There's plenty of baby aces around, but none of these.
None of the super aces. Wow. Does it still fly? Or does it still...
Well, you could, but no, it won't. We don't fly.
No, I don't. But it still would work.
It would do. The engine goes and all that sort of stuff. Since we've restored it, we've had the engine running.
Running?
Flying it.
So it's a unique piece. It's the only one in the world.
That's right. And it's the same with the Venture glider here.
Yes.
Now, that was built by Jack Coomber and a consortium of Narromine and Dubbo men in Dubbo.
Right.
In 1951-52.
Mm-hmm.
You got the plans from England, but you had to supply all the materials yourself.
Right.
So they built it, and they used to fly it in Dubbo. I think then went down to Orange and roundabout. But anyway, and then they retired it after about 30 years. There was only four of them built, apparently.
Okay.
And this is the only one that's left in the world.
All right. So what about this yellow one our left?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you that in a minute. We've got the Wright Flyer here.
Okay.
Now, that was built in Narromine between 2000 and 2005 by the Hayden family.
Yes.
That is, as far as we're aware, the only replica that's flown properly in the world. Mm-hmm. It's a replica of the Model A. Cole Pay was a local bloke who moved to Scone, but he used to come and fly it.
Okay.
It's flown 16 or 18 times now. And so there have been plenty of replicas built, but none of them have flown like this one.
That one's actually flown.
It's flown 16 or 18 times and gets up to about 8 or 9 metres, flies a kilometre to a couple of kilometres along the runway. You wouldn't leave the runway in it. So that's pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the Tiger Moth here.
Yeah, that's the one.
We've had that in now. It was donated by a local group who had it restored. They bought it in the 80s, I believe. They used to fly it, then they had it restored. And then, unfortunately, somebody ground-looped it, which cracked the spars in the wings.
Oh, okay.
And so that's $100,000 to get that repaired. So they, in their wisdom, decided to donate it to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was built in 1941. It's an English Tiger Moth, because they also built Tiger Moths in Australia. And then it's also got a Gypsy Major engine in it, but it's a Stag Lane, which indicates that it's an English engine.
Yes.
And the other one, the other engine there is also a Stag Lane. So, yeah, we had 85 odd of these here. Some of the classes that we had during the elementary flying training school had over 90 trainees in them. So we have then a very interesting collection here,
mm-hmm.
The Bailiu collection. Tom Bailiu was the CO here during the Second World War for a couple of years. What we didn't know at the time was that he was in 3 Squadron in the First World War.
Okay.
And he died probably 20 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And their family decided that they'd like to have his material here. And so we have the propeller of his RE8, so that's over 100 years old. We have his Sidcot flying overalls there.
Yes.
Which was designed by Sid Cotton, who was a Queensland bloke. And that's what the Australian Flying Corps used to use.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they got to Egypt and the Royal Flying Corps saw it, they said, oh, wow, that's what we want. And so they started making them in England.
Uh-huh.
So the very interesting part is, though, that 3 Squadron was the squadron that captured the Red Baron's plane when it crashed.
Right.
And so we have a piece of fabric there off the Red Baron's plane, von Richthofen.
Okay.
And all right. So we also have a piece of fabric there called a lozenge.
Mm-hmm.
That's off a Fokker D7 made under contract by Albatross. It's number 534 made, and it was made in 1918. So that's a, we have also Tom Bailey's, all his medals there, including the DFC. So it's very interesting display. We've got the little numbering system in there where
yes.
you can get the oversight by reading the red sign.
Yes.
And then if you want to go into the detail, you look at the numbers mm-hmm. and the, they'll be all described down the front here.
And you've got the self-guided recorded walking tour.
We not really.
Okay.
We've got those things.
Earphones?
Yeah, but a lot since the virus, nobody would use those.
Okay, all right.
So you could cancel that.
Okay, yep, okay, that makes perfect sense as
yes.
a result of the virus.
Yes.
Have you lost a lot of people coming through as a result of that? Is business now starting to pick back up?
It is.
Yep.
We last year we were closed for 3 months, from right. March right through until July or something, mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so that was, that hit us pretty hard,
yes.
but we had some quite strong donations given
yeah.
to us to keep us rolling, which
right.
which was really good,
mm-hmm.
and so, but, so that sort of held people back, and then because the borders were closed, we were getting a lot of people from Sydney out here.
Yes.
Because we used to get many people from Sydney out here at all.
Okay.
I mean, most of them would come from Brisbane or Melbourne and Adelaide. We
mm-hmm.
used to get more coming through here. But the Sydney people didn't say, I've always said, like, Sydney people, I think about 5%.
Okay.
Of Sydney people have been west of Katoomba. really, which is unfortunate, but
is.
That was the case.
Yeah.
Very few people from Sydney had been west.
Okay.
So, but anyway, I think that's all changed. And so, but we have some big groups coming through.
Yes.
Next Friday, that's Good Friday, we have Scott McGregor, the railway tour chap, is
yeah.
bringing 50 through. But on the same day, we have the Morris Car Club coming through, and
okay.
they're bringing 116 through.
Wow, okay.
And we're also putting on lunch for them. And then on the 17th of May, we have the Buick Car Club coming through. They're bringing 100 cars.
Fabulous.
And they say there are at least two people in each
in
car.
Each car.
So we'll have over 200 people here.
That's
just
fabulous.
From that one group. So, yeah, those that makes a huge difference.
A huge
too.
Difference. Because
yeah.
it is all run totally by volunteers.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
so,
definitely.
And it's not at the cost to come in?
It's for adults, it's $10.
Right.
For seniors, it's $7.
Okay.
And for kids, high school kids, for primary school kids, it's $5.
Okay.
Although the little kids, we don't charge
You're not
for
charging.
That. No.
And all that money goes into keeping
That's
the
right.
museum.
That's right.
Spick and span. And
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
Fabulous.
And well, we're always got up to. See, we've got the Jabiroo there.
Yes.
Now, we only got that last week.
Mm-hmm.
That is number 004.
Okay.
It's the first one commercially sold in Australia. They're made just out of Brisbane.
Right.
And from what I've read so far, since 1980, they've built over 2,000 Jabiroos, a lot of which go overseas because
mm-hmm.
they're very highly sought after.
Right.
And but a chap offered us this one. Which we purchased from him, and we've just cleaned it up, and we're going to hang it from the rafters. So it's number, as I say, 004.
004.
So first one commercially sold in Australia. So, yeah, so that's... but there's always money involved
in
those sort of things.
Of
and But we try and keep upgrading. We've
mm-hmm.
upgraded this... about 2 months ago, we've put in the Narromine Aero Club one over there. That cabinet was empty. We built it a year ago.
Okay.
And because of the COVID, couldn't get our curator up here to
yes.
to do it. And so anyway, we got that done about 6 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and that's given that corner a big lift. And then, of course, we've moved some photos around. We've got an interesting photo up there. Do you know who the fellow in the middle is?
I've no idea.
That's okay. Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, really? The astronaut?
That's right.
Okay.
Second man on the moon. Yeah, okay. Well, Buzz Aldrin came out here when the Wright flyer first flew in 05.
Okay.
And I looked after him all day, and lovely bloke to talk to. And then we got Keith Hayden on the left, who was a plane mechanic during the Second World War and who worked here and a lot of other places. And on the right, we have Eric Hayden, his son, and he was the mover and shaker in getting the Wright flyer built.
Okay.
So, but his father and his mother gave him a lot of help and so on. So, yeah.
All right, Peter, well, we're going to have to wind this up now.
Oh, are you?
We could, unfortunately, it's radio.
There's a bloody lot more I can tell. I can see that.
I can tell.
The women's display there, Nancy Bird Walton and others.
Okay. The thing is, it is radio, yes. Well, brief overview.
Got the big photo here.
Yes. So I guess the thing is, it's a fabulous place to visit. You're not going to see it in half an hour. We've been chatting for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So really, how long do you think? Would you estimate, like, to see it, a quick view, it'd have to take you an hour.
It would. It depends on your interest. Like, a lot of people just want to, I encourage them to read the red signs.
Yes.
Which we've got in most of the displays, and that gives them a quick oversight. You can read that in a minute or less.
Yes.
And that gives you a quick oversight of what to look at.
Mm-hmm.
If you then want to get into the detail, you can spend another half an hour just reading the details.
The details
that we've
along
got.
To the red
so
signs.
So look, you can stay. A lot of people, particularly when they've got little kids like this, might stay in here for 40 minutes.
Yep.
But then you get some of the people that are into aviation and fair dinkum, they'll spend all day.
Yeah. You can understand
three or four hours easily.
So, all right.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So. Well, this is the place to come then if you're interested in aviation in Narromine.
Yeah, that's right.
Peter, I'm going to have to wind this up, my friend. I'd love to chat longer with you if we do have a bit of a time limit.
There's a lot more stories though, mate, I can tell you. You'll have to come back tomorrow.
I will. Yeah. What sort of song can I play for you to wind this up? It's got to be Australian.
Yeah, well, I think that. I like the Road to Gundagai or Waltzing Matilda or just like those. And they would be pre-war. They'd be 1930s songs, I'd imagine,
absolutely.
Or 1920s.
Yes.
That's what I like.
One of those ones.
Yeah, not so much one of the country or one of the modern ones. Yes. I like that sort of 1920s, 1930s. Era.
Leave it up to me. I'll try and find a 78 copy somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, I know. No, that's really good. Okay. Really good. So, anyway, yeah.
All right, listeners, we're going to be back with more Roaming Oz straight after one of the original 1920 versions of The Road to Gundagai.
There's a track winding back to an old-fashioned shack along the road to Gundagai. Murrum Beach is flowing beneath that sunny sky, where my daddy and mother are waiting for me, and the pals of my childhood once more I will see. Then no more will I roam when I'm heading right for home along the road to Gundagai.
Welcome back, listeners. If you've just joined us, my name is Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz. And we have Jeff Dia from Checkweight with us again today. How are you, Jeff?
I'm going great, Phil. Yourself?
Oh, mate, fabulous, fabulous as always, and always a pleasure to chat with you. My listeners are enjoying it and learning so much, which is so important in this business. This business of retiring, buying a caravan and doing the big lap is a lot more needed than just going out and buying a new car and a caravan. They actually need to know what's involved, and you're keeping us up to date. So thank you so much for that.
No worries, Phil. It's my pleasure. And hopefully everybody's enjoying what we're talking about.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. Now, last week we mentioned compliance plates, and we are going to discuss that today. So tell us all about the importance of the information that's on the compliance plates.
The compliance plate is actually quite important, but one of the things that you have to realise is there's no standard for a compliance plate in Australia.
Right.
So different caravan manufacturers may put different information on it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at a new caravan, or and we'll look at new caravans versus secondhand caravans because they're a bit different.
Yep.
So if you're looking at buying a new caravan, you know, check out what's the information is on the compliance plate when you're looking in the yard.
Right.
Now, there'll be the standard, you know, information. You know, there'll be manufacturer, make, model. There'll be a VIN number, the date of manufacture, those sorts of things. So they're pretty standard.
Yep.
Now, the weight-related ones are, you know, tear mass, your ATM, GTM, axle group ratings, and tow ball.
Okay.
So your tear mass is... and we alluded to this when we talked about acronyms a few weeks ago.
Yep.
Is what the caravan weighed when it was manufactured.
Okay.
Now, some manufacturers, and I won't mention them, but they sell a lot of caravans in Australia, don't actually put a tear mass on their compliance plates anymore.
They don't.
And it's sort of interesting.
Right.
And I think part of that, and you know, this is me guessing, stems from the point of view that people would buy a caravan, get the dealer to put a heap of stuff on it, then they take it over a weighbridge or get a weigher, like a check weight, to weigh it, and then they go back and say, but the tear mass is different.
Mm.
And that's because the dealership's added stuff to it.
Okay.
So you will find it on your registration.
Yes.
So on either online, if you go through in New South Wales, you go through Service New South Wales, it will have a tear mass on it. But there's no, or on your registration papers, but there's nothing on the compliance plate.
Okay.
But most manufacturers do have it there.
Okay.
Then you'll have your ATM, which we refer to, which is your aggregate trailer mass.
Yes.
So that's the maximum weight the caravan can weigh whilst unhitched.
Yes.
It will also have a GTM, which is your gross trailer mass, which is the weight on the wheels, so what it can weigh when it's hitched.
Yes.
Now, the tow ball ones are really interesting. There's usually two or three related to tow balls.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is ball loading at tear.
Yes.
So that's what the tow ball weighed when the caravan was manufactured.
Mm.
So it's not a recommendation, mm-hmm. and it's not what it should be when you're towing.
Right.
It's an indication of how heavy the caravan may have been when it was manufactured.
Right.
Now, I've got to say, I've weighed over 500 caravan combinations now, and it took me a while to look at a compliance plate, look at the design of the caravan, know whether this caravan is going to be light or heavy at the front.
Okay.
I can do that now. So it's really hard for you as a consumer to walk in and look at this caravan and go, oh, it's got a tow ball weight of 100 kilos, so that's really good.
Yep.
Or it's got a tow ball weight of 250, that's really good.
Okay.
But look at it. Percentage of your tear mass. Okay. The other one is it'll have maximum permissible ball loading.
Yep.
So that's generally, say, you know, most caravans that will be 350 kilos, unless, you know, you're up in the 4-ton caravans or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not most of us.
Okay.
There will be the occasional caravan, though, that will actually have a maximum permissible ball loading, which is less than 350.
Okay.
So that's the maximum that the caravan manufacturer has said you can have your ball weight at. So they're a couple to be very aware of from a weight point of view.
Okay.
One of the other ones is the axle group rating. Now, this is an interesting one, and I see this. It's usually the maximum that the axles as a group can take in weight.
Okay.
So if your caravan doesn't have a lot of payload, you may look at upgrading, and that's the ATM or the GTM of the caravan.
Right.
That's something that you can look at to know whether you may be able to do that in the future,
mm-hmm.
If your payload is quite low.
Okay.
The other... information that you'll get on a compliance plate, which is quite relevant, and it's weight related, is your tyre pressures and your tyre load rating.
Right.
Now, I'm not a tyre salesman, and I'm not going to recommend anything, but what I would say is that I get asked a lot, what tyre pressures should I be running? And I go, I don't know, but what's on your compliance plate?
Uh-huh.
And they go, don't know. I haven't looked at it. Okay. Yep. So there's a recommendation that, you know, this is what the tyre pressure should be at tear when it's cold or at GTM.
Okay.
Okay. So to me, that's a pretty good starting point. It also maybe have a tyre load rating. So what each tyre is allowed to have, so like at the maximum weight. And also a speed rating.
Yep.
So so the compliance plate is quite important from that point of view.
Yep. So, you mentioned before the tear, like the tow ball weight at tear when there's nothing in the van. And it's why do they have to have two tow ball weights? You said there was one was at tear weight and then one was...
The maximum.
Yeah, I mean, who cares what the tow ball weight is at tear? Because you're never going to tow it around empty, are you? Or is that just a confusing thing to have on there?
Look, I think it is actually quite confusing and misleading in some respects from a consumer point of view.
Mm.
Look, I don't know exactly why. You know, there's probably some legislation thing that says that you have to. But if you actually look at the plate, and I'll say this 90% of the time, if you add the tow ball at tear to the GTM rating, that will equal your ATM rating.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's not necessarily the way it should be, I've read, but that's generally what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it's how they actually work out your GTM rating.
Okay.
Okay. But... for example, if you've got a tow ball, say your ATM rating's 2.5 tons, and you've got a tow ball which is 100 kilos, then that's a pretty low percent.
Yes.
If it was 250 kilos, so the tow ball at tear, which is exactly 10%.
Okay.
That's an indication to me that this is a quite heavy caravan.
Mm.
And if you've got a big box and a tunnel boot at the front.
Yep.
Then it's going to be very difficult for you to use that storage. And I've actually seen that where a tow ball weight, I think it was about 200 kilos on a 2.4 caravan.
Yep.
So, and then he put another box and a fridge in the front and ended up with a tow ball about 330 and was towing with an MUX, so could only have a maximum of 300.
Yep.
So if you start to get your head around it and look, well, this tow ball is very heavy, where's the storage?
Yep.
And you'll find that hybrid caravans, because they've got the fridge and the kitchen and everything at the front, are naturally very heavy at the front.
Okay.
And that's why a lot of them will have these two spare wheels and the water tank at the back to take weight off
the ball. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good thing, though, or a bad thing to try and... Yeah, I take it off the... they've got it all on the front, and really, in order for you to get the best tow, you've got to add things, they've added things to the back. And I guess this is one reason when people see that, oh, this guy's got bicycles hanging off the back of his caravan, and look how straight it sits. Well, that could be purely because he's got a really heavy front tow ball weight, and he's trying to distribute some weight.
It could be I think in a hybrid, they're designed that way.
Yep.
So I think it's very different to us adding weight at the back to counter a heavy tow ball.
Yep.
And I see it all the time. I know we talked about tow ball weights before, but somebody will put, the generator, which weighs 30 kilos at the back.
Yeah.
So then they'll put 30 kilos at the front.
Okay.
Now the percentage is not the same.
Yep.
So what the 30 kilos at the back is taking off is not the same as the 30 kilos you're putting at the front.
Yeah.
So it's making it different.
Yep.
But I say to people when you're just making a seesaw worse.
Yeah.
By putting weight at the front and the back.
Yeah.
So if your tow ball is too heavy, move the weight back that you've got at the front, or put it over the axle, or just remove the weight to give you a lower tow ball weight.
Right.
I think sometimes that's the cheapest and easiest option, but it's the least popular option to actually take things out of the van and leave it at home.
Yes, well, that's the thing. You see, everybody wants to take everything, don't they? Even though there's a kitchen sink in there, they seem to want to take their own kitchen sink. They want to take absolutely everything that's at home. And I mean, I've seen people. I saw a chap on a trip once, and he had a Honda 2.5K generator, 2.2K. And I said, "What have you got that for, your air conditioner?" He said, "No, that's for the wife's hair straightener and the hair dryer." And I couldn't believe it. She was standing outside drying her hair, and he said, "It's the only time I use this blasted thing is so she can dry her hair on a rainy day." So yeah. Lugging around a blasted great generator so he can run a hairdryer. He said, "I've never used it on the air conditioner, believe it or not. It's only for the wife's hairdryer."
And my wife is a hairdresser, so I can sort of understand that. But there's 12-volt ones. They may not be as good.
Not as effective.
But, and there's also, the fresh air.
That's true.
But weight. I mean, I had one guy I know. He had a nice big fridge in the caravan. Then most people put a big fridge in the
back of the car.
In the back of the car, like, and then they put another one on the front. So he actually had three fridges.
Oh wow!
And I sort of questioned him. Said why? And he said, "Well, I've got drinks in one, and I've got one as a freezer, and then we've just got food in the other one."
Yep.
And he said, "I don't want to run out of food." And I said, "Mate, you're going to run out of power and water before you run out of food." I suppose we're trying to do it every eventuality. But, I'm not sure what's happened to the humble old Esky. Those Eskies are a lot lighter and a lot easier to move around than the big 90-litre fridge.
Look, the humble old Eskies have been something to carry fish in when you go out for the day. Now, I don't think people use Eskies anymore. I do see them occasionally. But even I've seen people with tents. They've got battery-operated fridges running from their cars, you know what I mean? Like the humble old Esky has gone to the humble old camping heaven, I think, with a lot of people.
Yeah, so. I suppose I see the fridges and the fridge slides and the extra battery and everything and the solar panel. I see the weight.
Yeah.
I think I said to you in another show, I talk about weight, not convenience.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's your business. And the more we talk, the more I understand that most people are carrying far too many things that they don't really need. And it's just to say, but if I need it, if I have it, I mean, like myself, I carry more tools than I know what to do with, but I always think, what about if somebody breaks down and needs them? They won't need to call a mechanic. All they need to do is operate my stuff, because I've got far more stuff than I ever never need, and I'm guilty of it as well. So,
I think we all are from time to time, Phil. Yep. So I think no one else has to take tools, because they'll see you on the road.
They will indeed. Right. You said that to me the last time. I'll turn it into a business. I'll have tools for hire on the side of the road. Matey, we got it. You're going?
I was just about to say, I do repeat myself for emphasis sometimes.
That's fine. That is perfectly fine, my friend. We're gonna wind this one up, my friend. What can we play for you? What's your Aussie song for today?
Well, this one's not for me. It's for my good wife, Jewel,
okay.
who is a big support behind the scenes for Checkmate.
Okay.
And it's one of her favourites growing up, Daddy Cool, Eagle Rock.
Eagle Rock, Daddy Cool. Does she know how to do the dance?
Absolutely.
She
everybody,
does?
She said, it was guaranteed to get you on the dance floor when Eagle Rock come on.
Absolutely. Fabulous. Fabulous song. Fabulous band, Daddy Cool. Ian Ross Wilson. Ross Wilson is still going, the lead singer of that band, and still performing today. Fabulous. What are we going to discuss next week? Or are you going to keep us in suspense?
Keep it in suspense.
All right, let's keep it in suspense. Now, listeners, if you do have any questions for Jeff, okay, regarding weight, you can email me at info@romanoz.com.au, okay? Now, we did have an email a couple of weeks ago from a chap named Rod. He was from Victoria, wanting to know about carrying water in his tanks when travelling. And if you do have any questions at all about weight, send them to me. That's info@romanoz.com.au, and we will put them to Jeff on the program. Jeff, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Until next week, you take care and have a lovely week.
Thanks, Phil. Travel safe.
Thank you so much. Stick around, listeners, for more of Roam and Oz straight after Daddy Cool's Eagle Rock.
Turn around once and we'll do the Eagle Rock.
Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au.
Oh, g'day, listeners. Phil C here, Roaming Oz, and we are at Hill End, and I'm chatting with Rachel and Matthew, and they've got this brand new Hurricane family enduro. How are you guys today?
Really well, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much for talking to us. And let's talk a little bit about you guys before we start talking about the van. You told me earlier you're a diesel mechanic, Matthew, and you've actually given up your job?
Yeah, I quit my job at the end of last year, so okay. December 2021.
Okay, and you're now full-time travellers on the road?
Full-time travellers on the road, yeah.
With no end date?
No end date at the moment.
Fabulous, fabulous. I got to ask you, Rachel, you got two little babies here.
Yes.
Two and one.
Two and one.
Yeah.
From a lady's point of view, you've obviously left a home and you're now living in a fabulous van, which is your home on wheels, but a little bit more confined. How are you going with two little babies?
Not too bad. I think I'm the one that has the most stuff out of everybody.
Okay.
And Matt was on my case to really pack things away and get rid of a lot of junk. So I'm still working on that.
Okay.
But we're doing all right.
You're doing all right.
Yeah.
And you've had no major difficulties with bad weather and how do we entertain the little ones?
Oh, yeah. We've had a few rainy days and we've had a few movies on and Netflix and Encanto movie on Disney multiple times.
Trying to keep them entertained.
Trying to keep them entertained, yeah.
All right. So you guys left Victoria about 6 weeks ago, starting on your big lap.
Yes.
Now, what have you sort of seen to get to Hill End so far? Matthew?
We started off, Rachel's family originally up from Yarrawonga on the border of New South Wales and Victoria, so they have a house in Bundalong. So we started there and just sort of we made our way first to Mount Kosciuszko.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, and we took the van up the Alpine Way, which was interesting.
So
there was a fair few descents that we might not have done again. But
the reason why we say interesting, listeners, is because it's 22 foot, is that right? That's the actual caravan.
Yeah.
But from end to end, it's 30 feet.
That's correct, yeah.
So she's a big rig.
Yeah.
And you're towing it with an Everest. So the descents, little bit scary for you, or you just had to really slow it down and...
Yeah, just had to slow it down and then also use the trailer brakes a fair bit more.
A fair bit.
Yeah, and then we ended up just taking it really slowly. I think that the Alpine Way is about 100 Ks and it took us 3 hours and 45 minutes to do. It was a fair drive.
Well, the thing is you've got to drive to conditions. That's the main thing. As long as you're not in a hurry, and you're not because you've got no end date, it wouldn't matter if it took you 3 hours or 4 hours. The main thing is to get there safe. So the van, it's a fabulous unit. And I just want to know, what made you choose Hurricane? Was it you, Matt, or was it Rachel? How did you come to the decision? Did you look at a lot of vans, first of all?
Well, we were in Melbourne, so we were looking during lockdown. So we couldn't actually go to see a lot of vans at that time. So we were looking online, looking at secondhand options even. We just wanted a van that would fit the family. So we wanted bunks. We wanted a bathroom.
Yes.
And we wanted something ASAP because we wanted to leave, you know, January, February this year.
Yep.
So as soon as lockdown was over, we just got to the first caravan park we saw and they had this available.
Wow.
And so that's kind of how we made our decision, but we're super happy with it.
Yep.
It ticked all the boxes for us with the bunks, the toilet, the double bed for us. So, yeah, that's why we chose Hurricane.
Ticked all
really.
Your boxes.
Yeah.
Now, what about you, Matt? Was there anything particular about it for you or was it just a happy wife, happy life? How did you decide?
Well, I didn't really get to decide. I was at work and Rachel said she was going to look at a van and she was taking her dad and I got home and she had this cheeky grin on her face and I said, what have you done?
Big smile.
And yeah, she just bought it. So I didn't really get much of a say, but I had looked at it a little bit before online and I was wrapped with it. It did tick the boxes. I probably at the start wasn't, I didn't think a bathroom was necessary, like that necessary, but since being on the road with these two kids, like it's just a lot easier, you know, like a lot easier.
The thing is though, I mean, you've got no end date. So, and you'd no doubt have a washing machine in there, right, Rachel?
Yeah.
So the thing is, if you're going to travel on the road, you have to be self-contained. And that's the main thing. Like if you don't have power, you can stay pretty much anywhere. And with two little babies, a bathroom and a toilet. A toilet, Rachel? Yeah, you've got to have a toilet, right?
Absolutely.
And your own shower.
Yes.
And a washing machine.
Yes.
Which when you find you're travelling a fair bit, you're going to realise just how much a washing machine saves you.
Yes, we already have. Yeah. We've already said, you know, we rocked up to the laundromat and we're like, we don't have any coins to use this. So when we didn't have any power.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've been loving using the washing machine for the kids' clothes and everything.
So tell us a few things, like apart from the obvious, the washing machine and the bunks, which is pretty much what you wanted, what do you have in there? What came with it as a standard? Would you know best then, or Matthew? What sort of came in it as a standard? Like you got a microwave, what else would you say? Like the features?
The fridge, which has obviously a freezer on it, the microwave, oven, the amount of USB power points and charging points in it, like you can charge your stuff anywhere, pretty much in the van, which is, you know, you probably don't think it is a big thing, but when you've got so many things that you do need to charge, it actually it comes in very handy for us. So those sorts of things, I mean, they have all these little add-ons like blue lights so you can locate your van in the dark and all of that sort of stuff. Yep. I mean,
and did it come with, does this one have an outside shower as well or no?
No outside shower. But, I mean, the speakers on the outside, it's got power to the outside, an antenna point as well, so you can bring your TV out here.
Yep.
Just trying to think of any other add-ons, but
yep. What's the thing, like you're talking about bathroom before? Now I've seen a lot of vans, Rachel, and a lot of vans they do have a bathroom, but they're quite small. Like the one that we got, because we've got the Toughmaster, the Hurricane Toughmaster, from 7th Street in Heatherbrae. And the bathroom in there is absolutely huge. I mean, do you guys have a large bathroom? I mean, you don't find it a bit squishy?
I find it okay, even being in there with the kids. And it's great. You can put the plug in, you can chuck the kids in the bath, and I can sit next to them and use it. There's plenty of space to kind of get changed and everything in there. So, yeah, it's a good size, I would say, for the van.
For the van.
And for the kids.
And for the kids, which is so, so important. Yeah. And what about you, Matthew, from a towing point of view? Now, you've got an Everest. 3.26.
Yep.
How do you feel that tows the van? Pretty easily?
Really well. Yep. Yeah, it actually does tow it really well. I mean, when you're on some, you know, steep inclines, it does take a bit more. But I've been super impressed with it, to be honest. It's done the trip without really any hesitation. Like I said, it went up and down the Alpine Way, and if you can go up and down the Alpine Way, it's doing a pretty good job.
Towing a 3-ton caravan.
Yeah, that's correct.
So whereabouts are you heading now, guys? Like you're here in Hill End and you got no end date. So where do you think your next point of stay will be?
So we're probably stay here another night because we actually love it.
Beautiful place.
But then we're going to sort of be making our way to Dubbo. Rachel has some family that lives in Dubbo, so we're probably going to make our way up there, see them, and sort of for the next few weeks we're hoping to go see the Blue Mountains too. It's been a bit wet there. Yep. I mean, if you have a look at the website at the moment, there's so much stuff that's closed there because of the rain. So we want to go there, but, I mean, it'll all depend on what's open and the weather, really. I mean, if you go there and it's 12 degrees and raining, it's not going to be
It's not going to be fun for you. No. It's going to be horrible for the little ones.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's pretty important. So just before we wind this up, is this the first van you've had or have you had other caravans?
No, this is the first van we've had. This is when we went to pick this up. It was the first time I'd ever been in a caravan. So
okay. Now you're a pretty tall fella, Matthew. How tall are you?
Just under 6 foot.
Just under 6 foot. So how do you find inside? You don't find yourself ducking your head or anything? It's plenty of head clearance?
Inside the van is fine. Sometimes when I'm coming out of the van, I have hit my head on this doorway a little bit, but I think that's just me probably rushing.
Okay. So this is the first van you've owned. You've had it 6 weeks. You've got no end date. Matthew, you pretty much had no selection in it whatsoever, except to keep your lovely wife Rachel smiling. Do you think if you were going to buy another van, you think you might try the Hurricane again if you decided, let's just try something a bit smaller? Or because they make a whole range of vans, and you've picked a pretty big one to start with.
Yeah, we would definitely get another Hurricane. This one, we're wrapped with it. Honestly, we're wrapped with it. Everything works. And we haven't had anything fall apart or anything yet. And it's a spacious van. And for us, it's been just really handy having that.
Yeah, and it's ticked all the boxes. And obviously, very affordable for what you're getting. Because some of these big family vans can cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
I do know that these ones are really priced. to sell to people. You know, best bang for buck, in my opinion, is a hurricane. And also the time it takes to get a new hurricane. That's the big thing too. Instead of having to wait 12 months, you can get them relatively quickly. Well, this is fabulous. Look, I wish you all the success. You got these two little babies. You're travelling. No end date. You're going to do the big lap.
Yes.
Fabulous stuff. Yep. I envy you guys. I really, except for the babies. I don't envy the two little ones. I think you're going to have your work cut out for you, but you certainly got a van and a vehicle that's going to do it. I'm going to wind this up now, guys. I've got to play a song. It's got to be Aussie. What's your favourite Aussie band?
I don't know. I don't know if he's my favourite band, but he's a great singer. Matt Corby. The song is Resolution by Matt Corby.
All right, listeners, stick around for Matt Corby's Resolution. Thank you so much, Matt and Rachel. And we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that.
I'm giving up this whole life on me. Call it out like a family. Stood up at my time, get a ride until the rubber leaves the road. You said don't lie, so I made the truth seem like a lie to even you. Control your fear, it's clear that you do not know where you're going to. So don't you worry, you'll be my resolution. Characters of no illusion.
hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.